British forces are marching on Washington, D.C.
President James Madison is rushing back to the executive mansion from Maryland. Here in town, citizens are fleeing on horseback and by foot into Virginia.
200 years ago, this week, invading troops destroyed two of the nation's most important buildings. Unfortunately, there was no way for us to find sound from that time, so for help in our storytelling, we're going to imagine how NPR would have covered the British burning of Washington 2 centuries ago had we been there. NPR's War Department correspondent Tom Bowman joins us now.
Hello, Robert.
And Tom, tell us where you are.
Well, Robert, I'm embedded with the invading British forces. We're on Capitol Hill, and I'm a bit far back with the horses and wagons. But what I can see, the British have formed a line, muskets at the ready, and then they're on the march toward the Capitol building itself.
And have you been able to find out much about their plans, Tom?
Well, the seizure of Washington, Robert, is as much about humiliating the American government and its officials and sending a message as anything. But I have learned that they'll target federal and military buildings, but leave the civilian population alone. And I just overheard one soldier, a real blackguard, saying that they plan on burning the Capitol. They seem very happy about doing that.
But Tom, I mean, have we seen any sign of American troops? Anyone trying to repel this?
No, not really. There have been some snipers, Audie, from some of the nearby houses. And there were some U.S. troops coming in. They fired a volley and then scattered back into the woods.
Are they any match for the Brits, Tom?
No, they're not. The British are in a large-sized force, a very good arms, some cannon, well-led. The Americans are just hopelessly outnumbered and, frankly, not very well-led.
That's NPR's War Department correspondent, Tom Bowman. Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome, Robert.
And just to remind folks, we're following the big breaking story here in Washington today. Obviously, the biggest story of this year, 1814, the British invasion of the city and burning of both houses of Congress.
And in the studio with us is Steve Vogel, author of Through the Perilous Fight.
Hi, Robert.
And tell us what's happening in the city right now in 1814.
Well, earlier today, the British force did soundly defeat the American militia that was set up at Bladensburg just outside the border to Washington, D.C. And American troops are retreating and the British force is moving towards the city.
Steve Vogel, thanks.
Now to NPR's congressional correspondent, Elsa Chang. Now, she joins us from the Capitol building. Elsa, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
And you've just entered the building. Tell me what's going on there.
Right now I'm standing in the gangway that links the two halves of the partially finished U.S. Capitol structure.
And what are the British doing?
Well, right now it looks like sailors are rubbing gunpowder paste on all the woodwork around the doors and the windows. And now they're telling all of us we have to leave the building immediately.
That's NPR's Elsa Chang. Elsa, we're going to keep an eye out for her.
If you've just tuned in, we're following news of this week in 1814, providing continuous live coverage of the British incursion into Washington, D.C. And in the studio with us is Steve Vogel, author of Through the Perilous Fight. What happened to the defenses in the city?
Well, certainly there was plenty of warning that the British were coming. Almost a week ago, they arrived in the Chesapeake Bay. They'd done a very clever job of disguising their movements, and the result has been that the American commanders have been absolutely paralyzed, uncertain what to do, and by the time they tried to put their forces in Bladensburg, it was too late.
And they're confronting an army and a navy these are the warriors who defeated Napoleon in Europe.
Yeah, some of them are known as Wellington's Invincibles, very capable veteran troops. They've had lots of experience fighting Napoleon's forces, and they're kind of upset at being sent across the Atlantic Ocean now to fight in another war.
Well, Steve Vogel, my director, is telling me that there's news from the executive branch. Audie?
Joining us now from the executive mansion, NPR correspondent Tamara Keith. Tam, what is the scene there?
It is chaotic. Minutes ago, a lone rider galloped down Pennsylvania Avenue, and he waved his hat and he cried, "Clear out!"
How are people taking this?
Well, the president's wife, Dolly Madison, has been telling the staff to load a wagon with valuables. I'm right here. I can see silver plates, china, books. There's a small bronze clock. They are all being hauled out.
Is the president's wife going to wait for her husband before fleeing?
No, Audie. I don't think Mrs. Madison is going to wait around for him. Sources tell me the administration is expected to operate out of the city. I guess they will rendezvous in Virginia.
NPR's President's House correspondent Tamara Keith on the scene. Tamara, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Again, we're following the British invasion of the city and burning of Congress.
We have reports now that both the president and his wife have definitely left this city, although separately. What remains of the tattered district militia has moved to the edge of the city, defeated and discouraged. They plan to regroup to the west of the nation's capital. At the moment, they're on the River Road headed into Maryland, and on the scene is member station WAMU reporter Armando Truhl.
Thank you, Robert. I'm standing just outside Tennelly's Tavern on the River Road. I'm touching one of the six-pound guns the District of Columbia militia were able to salvage from Bladensburg before being righted by the British. The bronze is cold. Obviously, it hasn't been used. The cost of that rout is written in black smoke and reddish flames over the skies of Capitol Hill. The two houses of Congress have been put to the torch by the British. Heavy black smoke is also coming from the Navy Yard. The Commandant and a handful of naval officers set it ablaze to keep American supplies and ships from falling into British hands. And oh my goodness, now I see yet a third column of smoke and flames, and I believe it's coming from the President's house. With me is Brigadier General Walter Smith of the District Militia. General, that's not water in that mug, is it?
Oh, no. It's whiskey. I'm drowning myself from the pain.
A crowd has gathered here at the highest vantage point in Washington. And like me, they stare in stunned disbelief as invaders burn our city. Cora Watson is the charwoman who works in Georgetown.
It is humiliating to have our public buildings burn.
Now, we don't know how long the Redcoats will be our uninvited guests here in Washington, or if Baltimore might meet their next unwelcome visit. General, I'll have some of that whiskey now.
Here you go.
From Tenley Town in Washington, I'm Armando Truhl for NPR News.
All right, we're going to return now to NPR's War Department correspondent, Tom Bowman. Tom, can you hear me?
Yes, Artie. I'm with the British troops, and we're now in the President's house. When we first got here, we found the table in the state dining room was set for a meal. There was mutton set out and beef, and it's still warm, and there was fine wine chilling in cut glass decanters.
I can't imagine the scene. I imagine things did not stay that way.
No, it's just horrible now. Soldiers are roaming the house, and the British are offering exuberant toasts. They lifted their glasses and declared, "Peace with America, war with Madison."
Did that mean they ended up looting the place?
Well, no, they didn't. They just took some small souvenirs. I'm now seeing a soldier walk away with a cushion under his arm, smiling and laughing, and they also were pulling some pictures from the wall.
How far did they take this?
Well, after an hour of feasting and roaming about with their muddy boots, they sent some soldiers to get fire from a beer house across the street. Sailors moved through the mansion, igniting everything. So just as we're speaking now, Audie, some of the wall hangings are actually burning now, and they're starting to see flames. They seem to be having a wonderful time. They're throwing rocks, and they're smashing with their muskets, and it's just a horrible scene.
Tom Bowman, thank you so much for your reporting.
You're welcome, Audie.
Well, I can't think of a worse week in the nation's capital. And to make sense of these terrible developments, we're joined now by our regular guests to analyze what it all means. Welcome to E.J. Dionne.
Hello, Robert.
And to David Brooks.
Hello.
E.J., the Capitol building and the White House are in ashes. The President and First Lady have fled town. Not a good week here.
Oh, this is a horrible week for our country. And as somebody who's been very unenthusiastic about this war, I just want to say at the outset that I hope a couple hundred years from now, somebody will be able to write that it was something of a miracle that we emerged intact from this war. And I think we can. But when you look at what's happened, we were deeply polarized going into this war. Congress was split. It was 79-49 in the House, 19-13 in the Senate. That's not much of a basis for taking the country to war with the most powerful country in the world.
David?
You know, I disagree. We entered this war because the British imposed trade restrictions brought about by the British war in France. They impressed our merchant sailors into the Royal Navy. The British supported Indian tribes against American expansion out of the Northwest Territories. So we really need to fight for that honor. We're the underdog here. We had to stand up and establish a sense of honor for ourselves and so other nations would respect us around the world.
I'm sorry that I have to disagree with David on that. It's not great to disagree at a time of war, but I do hope that after this terrible period of polarization, my part of the country up in New England almost seceded over this war. But I hope that after a period like this, we might, and this sounds idealistic, we might someday enter an era of good feelings where we can put some of these divisions behind us.
David Brooks?
I take a much more positive view of what led us into war, what forced us into war, and where we're headed after the war. Obviously, we've had a setback, but as Alexander Hamilton said at the founding of our country, we have the makings of a mighty empire. We'll look back, I think, from hundreds of years from now as a hiccup in our history, a hiccup that will be marked by growth and expansion and really a dominant presence of the world based on ideas that we just defended.
Yeah, I agree with David on that one.
Well, thanks to E.J. Dionne and to David Brooks for summing up a truly devastating week here in Washington, D.C., the last week of August, 1814. Steve Vogel, we're back in 2014 and not a moment too soon. So we know that Washington, D.C. remains the capital of an independent United States. It's not occupied by the Brits to this day. What happened after the British burned the executive mansion in the Capitol? Did they win? Did they lose the war? What do you say?
Well, the British felt by humiliating Madison's government, they'd accomplished their most important goals. And they only held the city for 24 hours. They had a small force. They had other cities they were hoping to attack. So when Madison comes back to Washington, he finds a city that's every federal building had been destroyed except for one. There are a lot of calls for surrender, for abandoning the city altogether. And this is when Madison really makes a show of strength and insists that Congress reconvene in the city and that Washington not be abandoned and that this word get out immediately, not just to the United States, but also across the ocean to Europe.
How long was it before the Capitol and the White House were rebuilt and functioning pretty normally?
Well, James and Dolly Madison never spent another night in the White House. It wouldn't reopen until early in 1818 when James Monroe was president. And the Capitol, which wasn't quite as badly damaged, still was unable to reopen for Congress and the Supreme Court until 1819. So there was quite extensive damage.
Steve, thanks for doing this with us.
My pleasure.
This is Steve Vogel. Our reenactment of the Siege of Washington is based on his book, Through the Perilous Fight, From the Burning of Washington to the Star-Spangled Banner, the 6 weeks that saved the nation.